Latter-day Saint Home Educators is pleased to bring you this audio presentation, recorded live during the 2018 Home Education Conference, held in Logan, Utah.
So, my name is Lisa Hone. I'm from Morgan, Utah. And just a little bit about me and how I got started into this. We had a daughter who was born with heart problems. And for the first couple of years, she basically did that. She dealt with her heart problems. And so when they were fixed, the doctors told us she was at her developmental zero. So this was like when she was a newborn, but she was two. That put her 2 years behind. And we saw this, you know, she'd have friends over and they would want to play dress up. And she'd have to come to me for help because she couldn't get herself dressed in the morning. You know, as she got to be about four, she was severely dyslexic. I mean, just crazy dyslexic. And everything was upside down and backwards in her mind. And so reading would be impossible. And I knew this program from California, where I'm originally from. And I have a brother who did this program and a sister. And I just found it really fascinating because I was learning how the brain was working. I was researching on my own, trying to help my daughter. I just thought, I need to go back and learn this for my own kids. And as I did, I realized there are so many kids that really need this, because ADD and ADHD, autism, Asperger's, they're all on the rise. It's not a problem that's going away. It's just becoming more and more of a problem. It's in most kids in the classrooms now seem to have ADD. So just to get a feel for you guys, how many of you have young kids, like under the age of five? They're not quite in school yet. Okay, and how many are school-aged kids? Okay, and how many are teenagers? Okay, so we pretty much have everybody, which is great. So this, what I'm going to be talking about is for anybody age 0 to 100. It'll be things that as we're talking about, you'll say, well, that explains me. That explains my childhood, me in school. And so it's kind of fun. It's fascinating. It'll be a little interactive. So I'm hoping you guys will be willing to stand up and participate, because you'll learn some things about yourself. My main focus today, though, is helping you understand your own children, because when we see behavior problems, we tend to get angry about it when we're a mom, and it disrupts the classroom, especially when you're trying to teach and they're trying to talk so that you can't possibly teach. It's frustrating. And so I want to explain some things so that it's a little easier for you to understand what's going on and help mitigate it a little bit in your own classroom. Okay, so what we're talking about is called perceptual motor skills. Perceptual, that's the things you bring in through your senses. So what you see, touch, feel, hear, your brain brings that in, and then it'll send it to what it needs, where it needs to go, and put it into a motor skill. So for example, if you say, take out a piece of paper, then a hand reaches in, grabs a piece of paper, puts it on the desk. That's a perceptual motor skill. They heard something, and they responded with the motor skill of grabbing the paper. Now, this can break down pretty easily. So we're going to talk very simplified biology, just so we don't get too complicated. All right, say you have some information and it comes through your eyes. Okay, you're reading something off of a paper or a board or a book. It's going to relay that information through a series of synapses that are in your brain. And these are kind of like bridges. This information is supposed to move along efficiently till it gets to where it needs to go. But that doesn't happen sometimes. There's inefficiencies. Maybe one of the bridges will go out, or maybe the information gets confused and so it can't go on anymore, right? And so it bounces back and forth. I kind of liken it to, instead of going from your eyes to your brain, it goes from your eyes to your arms to your legs, right? And it travels around until your brain hits it. It's like, oh, a few seconds ago they said this, now I need to respond. What that looks like in a child is you say, all right, everybody, we're gonna come over here. And one kid's still sitting, right? They're naughty, right? It's kind of what we think. We're like, why aren't you listening to me? Well, the information's in their leg, it's coming, and they'll get there, but not yet. And so when we have information going and it sometimes tries to skip, it'll send it back and it'll try to go. And it's like the game of telephone. And it gets confused, it gets lost, it gets jumbled. And that's where we have some breakdowns in the classroom for these kids. So when we're talking about development, they should be at certain stages at certain times in their life. And sometimes that doesn't quite happen. And so we want to make it most efficient, and we want to help them develop the way that they're supposed to by rebuilding. All right, so this is our world, right? Think about a normal day when you have the radio playing in one room, you have the TV on in another room, you have the blender going, maybe somebody flushed the toilet, right? There's all these sounds, all these lights. If they're playing video games, there's more sounds, more lights, more things to process. And our brain is starting to struggle to process all of this electronics that we have in our world. And it's difficult for kids to pick out what is important and what is not important. Now, first of all, when they are a baby, they are supposed to develop their figure-ground relationship. That means, who am I versus whose mom? And who am I versus the earth? You know, they need to have this separation. And the way we develop is head to toe, inside to out. And so if there's a problem, for example, a heart problem like in my daughter, that development will stop. Well, if you think about the heart, she didn't develop too far, right? So she's got to the heart, it stopped developing. Her hands and feet were not developed. They couldn't do things like getting dressed or holding a pencil. And so this becomes a problem in the classroom because they struggle to do very simple tasks. Let's talk about sitting in a chair. This is the most difficult task that we teach our kids, is how to sit. And sometimes they learn incorrectly. If you've seen kids when they're leaning on the table or they're sitting on their feet, maybe they're wiggling their foot. You know the wigglers, right? Somebody's probably wiggling right now. There's always a wiggler. It's them finding themselves. The central nervous system is supposed to locate our hands and feet, but they develop last, right? And it needs to find our head, our hands and our feet, because if a car's coming down the street, it's going to jump out of the way, right? And it does it for safety. If you touch a hot burner, your hand pulls away before your brain even realizes, I just touched something hot and now my finger is burned, right? I mean, we've kind of all experienced that. That's the central nervous system doing its job. Unfortunately, if it can't develop that far, then the brain takes over and it says, I will find the hands and feet, you know, and that'll be my job. Well, if the brain is finding the hands, then the brain can't be doing math, right? So it becomes very difficult. So kids will sit on their feet because it's like, then they know where their feet are and then they can do their math. But same with sitting in a chair. It becomes difficult to control themselves when they're sitting in a chair if they can't balance. And that's their motor skill, is sitting, and they should be using waist muscles, but instead they lean or they use some other method. Some kids will straighten up their shoulders and their neck and they'll be really stiff and it's like, hey, I'm in a chair, right? But that's exhausting. After an entire day of doing that, they're gonna be exhausted. So then it's like if you ran a marathon and somebody handed you calculus, you'd be like, I don't care, right? That's the same for these kids. You try to hand them math at the end of the day and they're gonna struggle because they're tired of sitting in a chair. So if your child struggles that way, you can move all of the really tough subjects where you have to think a lot to the front of the day and do art in the afternoon when they can be creative and it can be a little more less focused. Now, the problem with the poor body control is if they haven't completely developed, they usually wiggle a lot, they want to run, they want to move, because it's easier to run than to balance. And so that's where we get ADD, ADHD going on, because they have to be moving all the time. Their body has found their arms and legs, and they don't have to balance. And so it looks like ADD and ADHD, when really it's their body has not fully developed all the way. So how do we know if there's a problem? They're constantly moving. They're very tense. Like I said, they're straight, you know, so that they can stay balanced. They often go to their la-la land. They like to wrap up in blankets because, again, it helps them feel comfortable, kind of like an infant likes to be swaddled. It helps them feel who they are. They like to do that even when they're older. They sit on their hands, they sit on their feet, And they suck their thumb past the time when it's usual for them to be sucking. I mean, if they're one, you know, they might suck on their thumb. But I'm talking about a 9, a 10-year-old who wants to suck their thumb. Their tongue helps with activities. We'll talk about that in a little bit. They keep their hands in their pockets because, again, they can find themselves with their hands touching something. They get that feedback of where their hand is. They get angry easily. We'll talk about that a little bit, too. And they have a tight grip on their pencil. If you don't have fine motor skills, then you're going to grip it, right? Like death grip. You know, and you see them writing. It's really strong and dark. They lose their place reading. They skip problems in math, and they get distracted easily. This all comes from that figure-ground relationship, knowing where their body is and how to control it. This is what it looks like in a visual. This is my own child. And look at, he's at rest, right? He's playing the DS. This is him at play. So he is completely relaxed, which is why when you tell your child, just relax, you might not get what you're thinking, right? Because their relaxed is totally not my relaxed. That's like if I wanted to work out, you know, and somehow manage to fit myself into that position. But look at him. He's got his feet, they're found. His knees, they're found. His hands are found. His head is found. He's completely relaxed. He's just at play, laying on the ground. That's a figure-ground relationship issue. Okay, this is that child. Now, the fun thing is, you can do this with your own kids. You can ask them to take a picture of themselves, or to draw a picture of themselves. Now, if you say, draw a picture of a person, you'll get a pretty standard-looking person. If you say, draw a picture of yourself, then the things that they do, they're kind of fascinating. They give us a great insight into what their brain is thinking and what their brain is focusing on. So, like, he's looking off to the side. He has no neck, right? His feet are pointed inside. All of his energy is coming inside to him. And that happens in real life. I mean, you know, they like to be shy and reserved because all of their energy is focused on themselves and just doing their own body. And look at their hands. His hands are taking a major portion of his brain's time and energy. And so they are large in his picture. I did think it was cute. He was writing a book for a school project. I like my, he wrote self. So his teacher told us we needed to give him some art lessons because he was a terrible drawer. That's kind of how our school systems work, right? They look at symptoms and say, let's fix that symptom. I looked at that though and could see a figure ground relationship problem. And so we worked on that, and 1 week later, that's the drawing he drew. Now look at him. He doesn't just have shoes, he has feet. He has a neck. And look at this definition. Shoulder, elbow, wrist, fingers. He's in a thumbs up. He's looking straight at us. The energy is now out, not in. And look at his hand. So his left side is not dominant. And when we develop the dominant side first. So his left hand still takes a lot of his energy. Okay, so things are changing, but they weren't complete yet in 1 week. Okay, but this is why when we fix the root issues, their schoolwork comes along so quickly and so fast, not when we give art lessons. That would have taken years, right? You have a question?
I did just have a question. If you have a kid that seems to, like, not enjoy even drawing, he won't even, like, draw at all, mm-hmm. right? Can you test them with this sort of thing?
So one of the ways would be to look at his behaviors. If he's sitting on his feet, if he likes to wrap up. Some kids like something on their wrist, like a bracelet or a rubber band or something. They always have something on their wrist. That also will help you see. But also, look at this picture. So this is my daughter, same thing. She didn't like to draw because it was hard to hold a pencil, and she couldn't. So this is a picture of her. It's a line. But if you think about heart problems, and I said she develops into out, that was her. That's what she knew. So here we go, 3 months later. She was a person, and she's 4, so she still drew like a 4-year-old. But she had hands and feet and hair and eyes and mouth, you know. And so sometimes if they don't like to draw, it's because they don't like to hold the pencil. It's hard. And so that's not fun. you know, kind of like we'll talk about reading later, when they don't like to read, it's not because they hate imagination or books or, you know, something. It's because it's hard and they don't like it. So that right there could tell you that he probably has a bit of an issue with it. Okay, so this is a 12-year-old. So this is fascinating. He's closed, right? He's got no neck, no hands, no feet. And his hair was all swoopy into his face because he liked to hide. And kids, I see this all the time, especially in boys. When a teenage boy comes to me, they usually have hair in their face. And it's kind of a trick of theirs that they learn. If they cover half of their face, like one eye, that's half of the stuff that they don't have to process. And so remember, we talked about bringing everything in all together. He just took out half of the issues in his mind, right, with his hair. So here we go. 2 months later, his hair's coming up. And that's also how it was in real life. He didn't mind having not hair in his face. He has hands, ankles, a neck, ears, you know. Again, don't give them art lessons. Just help them find themselves. Okay, here's another example, though, that's beyond just the picture. So this is his handwriting, and this was a formal essay that he submitted to school. So this is his schoolwork. If you see, the paper's torn, handwriting's a mess, you know, it's hard to read. And so, again, they would say, fix his handwriting, right? Get him practicing handwriting. No, get him using his fingers and his hands, having fine motor skills. Because 3 months later, he jotted down a quick list, and look at how much nicer it is than the formal essay. His handwriting improved, it's organized, the paper's not trashed, right? He had skills. And again, this was not homework or anything. This is just him writing down a quick list. Okay, so when we fix the root problems, their schoolwork comes along just by leaps and bounds, grade levels even. Okay, so let's talk about anger. Maybe you have a kid with anger problems. It's kind of also something that's going on, it's happening. It's not really social skills all the time that causes anger. It's usually what's going on inside of them. And so when they have all this stress and anxiety of trying to stay in a chair and do their homework and think, that builds up all this stress, and it's like a balloon. It's fine when it's just sitting there, but one little prick and they're gonna explode out in anger, right? So if somebody just accidentally bumps them, they're gonna be like, hey! Right? And as a mom, you're like, whoa, what's that? What are you doing? You know? But it's not really that second that was the problem. It's that all that stress had to finally explode and they just had to release it all. We're going to talk about differentiation. So we talked about the tongue being out, right? Sometimes they use every muscle to do one activity if they haven't learned how to use that muscle properly. So if they can't write, they will use their shoulder and they will form letters with their whole shoulder, which is exhausting, right? And we're talking about energy a lot, and we want all their energy to go towards schoolwork, not to sitting in a chair or using a pencil. And so they use every muscle they have, kind of like Michael Jordan does with basketball. When he goes up for a big jump, his tongue comes out. Why? Because he's using every muscle in his body to jump, not just his legs, every muscle. And this is what kids do. So when they're writing, you'll see their tongue come out, you know, or their face will start moving, and you're like, why is their face moving? You know, but it's because they're using their face to be able to write. And so it uses a lot of energy. And it looks like that writing we saw before, that it's sloppy, it's messy, it's hard to read because they don't have that dexterity yet. Waist differentiation is a big one. We use our waist to balance in a chair. Unless we don't have waist muscles. And then we use leaning, and we sit on things, we wiggle a lot. This is a problem with bedwetting. Once they're past like 4 or 5, they really should not be wetting the bed. And if they are, it's because their brain doesn't have an awareness with their bladder. And so they haven't developed past that point yet. And it's funny, when kids come to me and like the parents haven't told me there's a bedwetting problem or anything, I'll be doing these exercises and I'll bring that awareness down, and immediately they have to go to the bathroom every time. And it's like, ah, we brought that awareness, and then they realized, hey, my bladder is full. And that's not a thing that they experience before, because their brain doesn't communicate with their bladder yet. And so when we bring that awareness down, then they can realize, okay, it's full. They don't have to wait until bedtime and it just eliminates itself. They know when they need to go. Even in like 16-year-old boys, can you imagine being on a date and not knowing if you have to go to the bathroom or not? It gets stressful. And so we want to bring that awareness down so that they don't have problems when they're dating or when they're older. But some kids, they learn to potty train just by being on a timer. You know, I go to the bathroom every couple hours. They don't know why. It's just because mom said, you know. But we want them to be able to have that awareness so they don't have these issues. Okay, let's talk about balance. So if you ask a child in kindergarten to walk across a balance beam, for example, and it's on the ground, it's a couple inches up, a lot of them will run. And it's because they don't know how to balance, but they know how to run. And so we call that compensating. They're doing some other activity than what you asked to kind of pretend like they know what they're doing, you know? And they'll even say like, I can do it really fast, watch me. What they're really saying is, I can't do it slow, so I'm gonna do it fast. And so when we make these activities a little more intense, then they have to balance. So I want everybody to do this. Everybody stand up if you're willing. And we're gonna check your balance. It's a simple thing that you can do with your own children. I just want you to stand on one foot, whichever foot you'd like. Hopefully you can hold that. Now I want you to close your eyes and see if you start to wiggle. Please don't fall over. Okay, you can sit down. Okay, what's happening here is if you start to wiggle or fall or had to grab something, you're using your eyes to balance. And so instead of waist muscles, understanding where you're at and knowing how to correct that, what happens is your eyes are like an airplane instrument. You know, on airplanes, when you have the little plane and it's got a horizon and the pilot can just kind of keep it on those lines to know the plane is level, your eyes are doing the same thing. It picks a point and it says, okay, you know, if those people on the back are completely parallel, then I know I'm straight up and down. But if you close your eyes and you fall, it's because you're using your eyes to balance, not your waist muscles. So that's a form of compensation. And so kids will do this when they're little because they know they're supposed to stand up. But if they haven't developed those waist muscles, then they use other tools that they have. They get stiff. They use their eyes to make sure that the world is staying balanced. And then they can stay upright.
Is this something you can learn throughout your life?
Yep.
You know, I start wiggling. Is that something I can practice?
And yes. Yep. It's for any age, 0 to 100.
Yep.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. Yep. And when they can no longer compensate, it becomes a real problem.
Yeah.
This is also why kids will all of a sudden fall out of a chair. Like if you've had like a toddler up at the kitchen table, you know, I mean, I'm sure I'm not the only one that has seen this where everybody's sitting and all of a sudden one kid just and you're like, what happened? And this is why. It's because they either forgot to compensate or they got tired of compensating and they just fell out of the chair because they have no other way of holding themselves up. So this is a big one of also it contributes to ADD and ADHD and the bedwetting. It's all because of waist muscles. And people will always, I hear every time, so I will just save you from saying this, my kid's an athlete. He has great balance. Maybe, or maybe he's really good at compensating. Okay? There's running on a field, and they're sitting in a chair using waist muscles, and they are two different things. Yeah?
I hate to give this example. Or take your time.
No, go ahead.
It's fascinating to me because I was on a scouting trip, and one of the kids got a thing in his eye, and it was a bungee cord, and we literally had to, you know, wrap both eyes, and as I hiked him out, I was just amazed at his ability to stay upright and on the trail, and he truly had this. He was a compensator.
Uh-huh, right.
So
yeah. How do we know if there's a problem? There's an unusual manner of walking. If you see some kids, they're, you know, walk in a line and everybody's walking behind each other and then one kid's holding onto the wall, that's their way of compensating. Because they can't move fast, they can't run, somebody's in front of them, so they hold on to something. They fall off their chair, they're always leaning on something or someone, which usually drives people around them crazy, right? And they're like, get off of me! It's like, they're just trying to stay upright, you know? They wrap their feet around the chair, like around the legs of the chair. They have trouble standing in line, and they're in constant motion. A good way to see if there's a problem also is to ask them to do a somersault. And if they get halfway over and then they go boom and they land right on their back, then they haven't developed those waist muscles. If they can flow down to the ground, then they have. You can try it too. I won't make you in here. And then they get a short attention span because they're more focused on staying upright, being balanced than what you have to say. All right, we're gonna talk about laterality. Now this is big word, but it just means an internal awareness of right and left. And our body should be able to handle doing things with the right and the left at the same time. But sometimes they can't. I'm going to grab a chair and I'm going to embarrass my kid. He came to help me today. All right.
I don't like this one.
This is a fun one also to do with your kids. You're going to go home with party tricks. You're going to be like, kids, guess what? We're going to do these things. All right, so I'm going to have him with his left hand padding up and down. He'll come up all the way to his shoulder and down. No, not this one. Yeah, just that one. All right, now I'm going to move his right arm for him while he still is padding. See? It works. Now, he cheated. He did my program. You can go. If you do that with somebody with dyslexia, they will completely stop motion. Would anybody be willing to be my guinea pig? Do you think? Yeah? Okay. Okay, so yep, keep padding, and then I will move your arm. Yes, good job. Okay, so that hesitation is because our brain cannot do two things at once. We all think we can so multitask. It doesn't. Your brain just takes this millisecond to focus on this and this millisecond to do that. And so there's a hesitation, and it's like, okay, now I'm padding, now I'm moving, now I'm padding. And it's switching back and forth. And so why that's an issue is because we read in our society left to right. And if we can't handle left to right and our brain working together, then there becomes an issue. Now, kids don't like to go across the midline. If you hand something to a kid, they will grab it and hold it in the midline, and then they will hand it off. They don't like to pass over. And that's because they don't want to cross the midline. That makes their brain have to focus on too many things, right? They want to keep things on one side or the other. Now, here's another one. Everybody stand up. And I want you to just march in place. So just march, march. Use your hands, right? Marching. Now, I want you to look down. If your rights are coming up together and your lefts are coming up together, you are one of those that doesn't like to cross the midline. Okay, you can sit down. So now, again, kids with dyslexia, they will always move together or they won't use their hands at all. And you'll say, use your arms, and be like, mm-hmm, I am. Right? And they keep going, and you're like, what's going on here? It's, again, they don't want to cross the midline. They don't want to coordinate the upper and the lower. And so they keep it all the right side, all the left side. Yeah. Yes. Yes. Yep. Yeah. They don't want to mix things. They just want to keep it very simple and pure. And so they want to keep it separate. Now, what you'll see when you have your kids like write something, the paper is on the right side of their body because they're right-handed, or it's on the left because they're left-handed, you know? Or if they read, they'll want to read like this. Or they like to read books where the left side of the page is on their left, and then the right side of the page is on their right, and they keep it like exactly opposite. So they will read like this, and then they will read like this. It's not like they're just reading a book, you know. They keep it very separated. Did you have a question?
Yeah, so something that I've done since I was a little kid is I would always shift, and people will tell me, it's like I had a dance teacher for 3 years, so she's constantly telling me, you can't hold your head straight.
Right. Right.
I'm wondering, is that something to do with laterality or something?
It is. It is. You don't like to cross the midline. So, and it's just a way to keep it easy for your brain to not have to switch. It's just one last step, you know? And so, now, one other thing that it could be also is that some people are right-handed, but they're left eye dominant. And so, yeah, me too. And so like when I'm, exactly. So when I shoot a rifle, I had to learn how to hold it with my left because otherwise I was leaning way over my rifle and people were like, what are you doing? You know? And so it's again, that body does not like to cross. And it's not a bad thing, but your brain had to figure that out because two opposite dominants make it just a little tougher to coordinate everything. Yeah.
So are these things to be aware of so we can adjust them, or are these things to correct and fix?
So that part is up to you. If say a child's reading is not at grade level and they struggle to read and they hate to read, then I would say fix it because it is fixable, you know. If it's something that it's kind of a quirky thing about you and you've never had a problem with it, it's fine, you know. But some things become problems, and that's when we like to fix it. Yeah.
Is this a symptom of inactivity in children? I know, like, I was like a total inside reader, never went outside, and I'm not very coordinated. So I'm wondering if the more you play outside, the more you kind of do things when you were little and develop.
Yes. It is, and that's why I call it optimizing the brain through movement. Because a lot of people don't know you could teach a child to read faster if you can teach them how to march right, using the opposites, you know, get them marching. If you have them start the day marching, they'll actually have an easier time with their schoolwork. And so it is, and I think, I mean, my own personal theory is that's why it's on the rise, is because as a society, we do a lot of sitting. And even with our babies, you know, I did it too because I'm a mom and I had 5 kids. And so that swing is kind of nice. And so is the extra saucer and the car seat and the playpen and the, you know, I mean, how many things do we have to get our kid to sit still when really what they need to be doing is being on a blanket wiggling, because that wiggling around, it's teaching them how to balance. It's teaching them laterality, coordination, you know, reaching, all those things that really 99% of their day should be spent laying down, wiggling. Yeah?
How do you know the difference when you should, you said something to correct it versus...
So I tell people that if it's a problem, let's fix it, you know? And the thing is if it's a problem when they're 5, it's not gonna get any better because the world just gets more stressful, more difficult, homework's more difficult. And so it's like, just fix it, you know.
Like, what do? You just bring the book in the center, or like?
So if you want to help them compensate, then yeah, you just, if you know that they like to have it on the right, have it on the right. You know, if they like to write on the right, let them write on the right. The way we fix it is actually through exercises, giving them specific exercises like marching that will teach their brain how to work together and coordinate so that they can function. kind of. Yeah, if we have time, yes.
Let's get to it.
Yeah. Okay, so how do we know if there's a problem? They usually don't like to do cursive writing. That's a more difficult task, to use circular motions than straight. They turn their paper away from their body. They reverse their letters and their words. So like on and no, that's the same word. So they have to read the entire sentence to figure out the context. Is that on or is it no? So if you can imagine, that would really slow it down versus just a kid who can read the letters. They must write away from them, not across their body. and they change hands rather than reach. We talked about that. They lose place when they're reading. They have trouble with math, difficulty reading, unable to hop. So left, left, right, right, left. You know, if you say, all right, everybody hop on your left foot, beyond the point where they should know which one is their left foot, they'll really struggle to coordinate. Well, which one is that, right? Their brain can't tell just their left foot to move. So they start hopping with both until they figure it out. One of the fascinating things is they can read words in a column, but not in a row. So if you have a book and they're trying to read it, it's really slow. If you give them a spelling list that you can put on the right side and they just read straight down, they can rattle that off super fast. It's that same reason. They can give verbal answers, but they can't write. Because again, it's that perceptual motor skill that there's a breakdown. They can't write it, but they know it. But writing is just so difficult for somebody with a laterality issue. And then trouble reaching across the midline. Okay, visual and auditory. So we talked about how much there is coming in to our minds all the time. It becomes very difficult. And so how do we know if there's a visual problem? If they're using an electronic device and then they're sitting there rubbing their eyes and their eyes are tired, it's not usually a vision issue. It's because of all of this coming in that they have to process. And so kids will actually come to me wearing glasses, and then a lot of times they leave not needing glasses because it wasn't a vision, it's their eyes were tired. And there's a difference in that. And so it becomes hard to complete an assignment because they're just tired of looking at it. So they don't want to read it. And then their work is sloppy. Copying is inaccurate. Again, if you have to see something from across the room on a board and then you're going to write it down, that information might get lost before it hits your paper. And so it's inaccurate what they're writing. And so for those kids, you can just hand them what they're supposed to copy so it's right next to them and they can see it easily rather than from across the room. And then playground activities are difficult. You know those kids that you take them to the park and they want to sit on a bench? It's because that playground is chaos. And it is. I mean, it is for me, right? You take them and there's 100 kids and there's so much noise and movement and everything's happening. Plus they have to balance. They have to be coordinated. I mean, playgrounds are kind of tough things. And so it's good for kids, but they don't like it. Auditory, they don't know which sound to focus on. So if they're watching a show and you call out from the kitchen and say, hey, come here, right? You don't exist because their show's what exists. That's what they're focused on. And so if they're having a problem with that, you can walk over to them, put your hand on their shoulder, and then say, hey, I need you to come do this. Because that hand tells them, this is what's now important. They're touching me. That's more important than somebody across the room on the TV. You know, so they know what to focus on. And then they may not be able to process verbal commands. Again, that was what we were talking about over here. It's going to take some time for that information to get to them. They have poor oral reading skills. Maybe they can read and tell you what they read, but if they have to read it out loud and verbalize, that's yet another motor skill that's going to cause a breakdown. They become hyperactive just because they're responding to the noise around them. You know, if the blender's going and your kids start getting all wound up, they're reacting to the blender. And then they talk constantly because if they're talking, they don't have to listen to you. And so you know those kids, right? When you start talking to them, their mouth starts going and you're like, just stop talking. They're actually trying to drown you out so that they don't have to do that motor skill of listening to you and responding. And sometimes they're thought to be deaf. That's obviously the extreme case, but they will just completely shut everybody out. And people will say, oh, they can't hear in a crowd because they have ear problems, you know? Nope. They just don't want to. And so they will literally shut their ears off so that they can't listen to people in a big crowd. Because if they have to listen to that one person, they're going to listen to it all at the same intensity. They can't pick out that one voice. And so what do we do about it? Okay, so how can we help a kid? If they have struggles with balancing, then let them do schoolwork in a beanbag chair. Because if you think about a beanbag, they're completely encased, so their body has awareness, and then they also don't have to balance in a chair. It's just supporting them, they're upright, they can solely focus on their schoolwork. Give them a contact. That's what I was talking about. You walk over, put your hand on their shoulder, and all of a sudden they will know that you're important. Yeah.
If you're doing that kind of stuff, like if you're putting them in a Mi'kmaq chair, is mm-hmm. that going to be helping them as they like grow older? Like, are they going to develop better, like so that they are going to be able to?
Yeah, I mean, that's
just
the hope.
Just giving them that comfort right now so mm-hmm. that they can develop.
This is a step
right.
towards,
right.
towards trying to solve it.
Yeah. You would still want to develop their waist muscles, you know.
So I'm assuming registered or licensed in something?
I am.
Who would you seek out to help with that exercise?
So yeah, and I mean, we'll talk about that at the end totally, but so this is what I do. I help, so kids come to me with reading problems or ADD or whatever, and I run them through a series of exercises to tell me what's happening with their brain and body, why it's not working efficiently, and then I know what exercises they need so that over a time of 9 months that they can slowly start to figure out how to coordinate their brain and their body so that they don't have these issues. But for little kids, you know, they will probably develop that on their own by the time, you know, as they're getting going. But in the meantime, you kind of want them to have something where you're not doing two things at once. You know, help them develop at a different time than you're helping them with math. So you'd put them in a beanbag. The reminders, usually they struggle with remembering because that information is still bouncing around trying to figure out where it's going to go. And so if you give them a list of 9 instructions, they're going to do 1, right? And you say, well, you didn't listen. Yeah, they did, but they didn't care about 2 through 9 because they were still stuck on 1, trying to figure out how to accomplish 1. And so for those kids, you'd want to give them 1 instruction at a time. You know, all right, put your name on this. Now you're going to do this, right? You give it to them a little bit at a time so that they could be successful and it's not as stressful to them. And again, you would start to help them learn to be able to do that. Give them 2 instructions after a while, but help them be successful before you move on and have all these expectations of them that they can't do. Eye-hand games. These are fantastic, and you can do them. So what I suggest, because you guys have control of your own schedules, so what I suggest is that you should do no more than 50 minutes of instruction and then 10 minutes of play. And that's at minimum. So if you could do more play, that would be great because it gives their brain that time to relax and be calm and then be ready to focus. But if you're if you're trying to get through all of your school before lunch and you're just gonna go for it, you know, or maybe you'll do a couple hours and then have 15 minutes and do a couple more hours, their skills level just kind of plummets and it's gonna be a fight and you're just gonna be struggling. So you want to coordinate your day that you're doing 50 minutes of math, and then you let them run and play for 10 minutes. Uninstructed, just let them go. And then you'll have an easier time when they come back of saying, okay, now we do this. eye-hand games, though, are great. Things like this, especially if you have little kids, you know, something where they have to visualize and use their hand to hit a target, that's great. Things like this, if you're reading the story to them and they can just twist something, they might actually understand the story better. And some of these you kind of have to play around with because some kids will be so focused on this that you don't exist anymore, so you don't want to give them that. You'd want to pick something different. But a lot of kids with a mindless tool in their hand, they will listen to you a lot better. So if you're going to tell them about history, or something, then you can hand them something to play with and then they will listen to you. Even just some colored rice in a bag. They can just sit there and crinkle it. Now, if you struggle with noise, you won't want to give them this one because then you won't remember what happened in your story.
If I gave my kids something like that, they'd be chucking it at
me. Right, exactly, exactly.
Yeah, or be on the floor.
Yeah.
Or the beanbag. So how do you keep it so that they're calming them rather than they're now they're using it to do something.
Yeah, to attack and yeah. So even some kids just like a Minky style blanket, you know, where it's just soft and they can feel it. Other kids like to doodle or draw. These are those little threader thingies that you can use. You just kind of want to play around with what works for your kid and what they need to be able to focus.
I think an answer to her question is, that I would say, is to start small. Like, just start with 5 minutes at a time.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Also, another thing is to only pull those out during reading time so that it's a special thing.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, that's a good idea. Yeah.
Yeah, and if you Google fidget toys, that's a lot of what people use. But also just looking around for really creative ways to use things that you already have. I have a very large primary class that I take care of with a lot of kids with a lot of issues, and I have approved things that they can do, and things that aren't approved, you know, that they try to bring in. And so, like, my oldest son has ADD, and a kneaded eraser was something he could bring into the ACT and not have any problem, but he could really squeeze.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys know what the kneaded erasers are. Yeah, things like that he would find that are normal things that wouldn't be too strange to have in your pocket that was still approved during times when it was really...
Yeah, even those
kind of out of the box.
Those little smooth stones that they can keep in their pocket and they rub it with their finger, just about anything. Paper clip. Did you have a question? Oh, okay. But yeah, anytime you can add in eye hand games into your instruction, that'll be great, because they have to process that through their eyes and then put it into a motor skill with their hands, and it'll get that brain figuring out that it can do that. You know, it can send information from the eyes to the hands. So if they can do that, then they can write, you know, and it teaches the brain how to do that. Also, anything that improves fine motor skills, you know, those help teach the brain. But you want to start with the gross motor skills and then move to the fine motor skills. We talked about copying from a paper, not a board, giving one direction at a time, working on the floor or a beanbag. I know when I was a kid, I mean, I had a lot of these things going on myself, but I had to, like, write essays sitting on the floor, just laying on the floor, because then I could think and I could just bust it out really fast. If I tried to go to a library and sit at a desk when people and things were happening, it never would have happened. And then having a relaxation time, just a place where if they're really struggling, they could just go sit in a corner and be by themselves, maybe even doing nothing to kind of reset. Just having a place where you say, let's just have some time to relax. Not like, you're being naughty, get out of here. But, you know, a time where they can just step away and refocus and then come back. And then the last one is big. No processed or refined sugar. Any kid hopped up on sugar is going to be naughty. It's just how it is. And so if you're hopping them up on sugar and then like, okay, now we're going to do school, that's horrible, right? Nobody's going to do, I couldn't even do that. I'd be like, I don't care anymore about it. So really watching their diets, dyes and, you know, any of that stuff, it's going to really mess with them. And so eliminating that is great. And then how can we help an adult? Okay, these things are big, and actually they work with kids too. And then yoga is fantastic because it is all about balance and coordination and using left and rights, and your left's doing one thing, your right's doing another, right? And the whole time you're supposed to stay calm. We want them to learn through relaxation, not stress, because stress zaps energy. If they can learn to be relaxed and do something, then they can focus for longer throughout the day. Swimming is great because it gives that awareness that we talked about. It is water touching every part of your body, so your brain knows where everything is, and it'll help them figure out how they relate to things around them if they're in water a lot. So giving them a bath will help them to get rid of stress. So if in the middle of the day you're like, this just isn't working, have them go take a bath during their lunch hour and come back, and they will come back a lot better off. Same with, you know, hot tubs or anything. Getting a massage, that's right. If you're stressed out as a mom, massage really does help. And this is the first thing that I do when kids come to me needing help. I teach a massage, and that's what we start with. And it really does help them release stress in kind of fascinating and sometimes hilarious ways. Because some kids that are really stressed, you start massaging it out, and they'll talk constantly. They'll be like having tears coming down their eyes or, you know, and it's just, it's got to come out. And so you just help them get it out.
Or like, I know that when I did it, I would laugh uncontrollably.
Yeah. Like he'd fall off the couch laughing so hard. So, because he was releasing stress, and so he'd just sit there and laugh. And you just let him, it's fun. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, you have to work up to it. For some kids, they do not want to be touched. And so you have to start very small steps before you can even touch them.
Seems like the
bathroom. Yeah, and it does. Yeah.
Sometimes with people that, because I'm a massage therapist, sometimes people that just don't want to be touched, they need like a firm touch first. Like you think, oh, massage needs to be soft and gentle, but they need like a firm touch to get there.
Mm-hmm.
Like that helps them be grounded. So try a firm touch.
So I have a daughter, it's like this right
she
here.
She doesn't even want
it. Yeah.
This is love.
Mm-hmm.
If there's any of this,
oh, yeah, right. Yep.
Then just put your hands on her. Because
so
just putting your hands on her,
yeah,
that helps really.
Yeah, not moving. And sometimes they like to be, they want to be like wrapped up really tight, and then you can kind of touch them. It just kind of depends. You got to play around and see what works with them. Yep. Being active, you got to get them running and playing more than just sitting around. I know with my kids, if they're watching TV for too long, they're grumpy and they're kind of mean and not fun to be around. And it's that they just sat there and processed all these lights and sounds for so long that they're kind of done, and so that anger comes out. And you want them to be running and playing and climbing and honestly falling. You want them to fall off of stuff because it helps them realize how not to fall off stuff. So if they're little and they fall off a small little slide at the playground, they're not going to get hurt. But if they're older and do something dumb and fall off of a really high place, then they get a broken arm. You know, so you kind of want them when they're little to be falling. Don't save them. Don't be like, "Woo, you almost fell there." They won't learn anything from that. Just let them fall as long as they're not going to be hurting anything major, you know. And then, like you said, a good diet even for us is good. Plenty of rest. The problem with this is some kids pass out more than they fall asleep. So they're so worked up all day long that all of a sudden they just pass out like it's almost like in a coma. You know, it's like they just have absolutely nothing left to give, so that's why they're asleep, not because their body has fallen into a state of rest. And so we want good rest. And that usually comes through massage and the baths and the things that we do to teach relaxation. Mental distractions or meditation. Meditation is so good because it gets rid of all that noise and the sound. And then having quiet time. If you try to watch TV and then fall asleep, sometimes it doesn't work so well. So if you have a time in between, maybe of just meditation, of quiet, you know, that'll help you fall asleep better than the other way. Okay, so what I do is I do this therapy. I do it with babies to elderly. I've done all ages. That's my website, honepotential.com. You can go on there and read more information. There's a tab called something like, "Why Does My Child Struggle in School?" If you read through that, it's a lot of what we talked about. It helps identify some things. If you're looking for help on how to get your child to not have so much ADD, then start with those relaxation things, getting them into baths, getting them swimming a lot, especially during the summer when it's warm and they want to be there anyway. Get them in that water. And then helping them be active, being physical, and anything that takes left and right motions. So marching, you can take a beanbag and just toss back and forth to each other. They have to coordinate left and right at the same time. That's gonna be a great skill for helping them learn how to get that coordination. Yeah.
Is that the same as, like, you know, you cross your arms and grab
yes.
your lobes and do squats? Or
it's why it works. Yep, because you're getting your right and left, so you're getting your upper and lower. Everything is focused on it, and so your brain can start figuring out how to do those things. Yeah.
So I'm really interested in when you said about potty training and how they don't even realize.
Yeah.
So what do you do to get past their ways?
So honestly, the best thing is like foot massages. If you're massaging their legs and their feet, their brain becomes aware of their legs and their feet, and then it fills in the blanks, right? It gets to everything in between, and all of a sudden they realize they have a bladder too. And so anytime you can add that touch to legs and feet, and I'm talking every part of their toe, you know, the tips of their toes, the middles, the balls of their toes, the toes, heels, arch, you know, touch it all, have that rubbing, that awareness, and it'll actually help them. And then the second part would be the waist muscles. If you can start adding in building waist muscles, then you'll be able to help them get that awareness. Okay, lay down. We'll see if you can do this without laughing. It's kind of intense. All right, you get them down on the ground like this. You bring your knees, and on the opposite side, here's like a hard hip. Oh, you got a big old hip. So it's tall. So here's the hard part, and here's his rib cage. And in between, there's this little soft, gushy part, right? So if you jiggle it like this, and then push in and hold and lift up his legs, it'll actually help him build the waist muscles. So jiggle and hold and then bring it up. Yeah, he's doing pretty good. Some of my kids die. If you do that like 20 times, like 10 on each side, then all of a sudden you'll start to feel this poking out against your hand as you jiggle and hold it in. Their waist muscles start to push out against and it'll build it. And so if you're doing that massage, you're doing baths, and you're doing that exercise, then they should stop wetting the bed.
What if you have someone that wets the bed and sucks their thumb?
It's all that. So you got the figure ground relationship, that knowing where their body is, not knowing where their hands are, and then they don't know where their feet are. So it's kind of both. They need to keep developing the whole way out. Yeah. And so we kind of have to leave the class soon, but if you have specific questions, I'll be sticking around to answer questions. You can also go onto my website and learn a little more information. Also, if you want, you can write down your name and give me your contact info, and we can talk about what is going on or what you might need help with. I do a program. It takes usually about 9 to 12 months to help the kids, depending on age and what they're dealing with. And if you're interested in signing up for that, we can talk. Sorry, I'm in Morgan, Utah. So if you know where that is, it's like east of Ogden, through the canyon, through the mountains.
So can you do this remotely?
I was just going to say that, yes. So the great thing is I could do it remotely. The best way is if I can see them first in person. But honestly, I have kids all over the country right now. And so we just use Skype and texting. I like to have the person be able to receive videos, because I will send exercises every week through a text. And so that's the easiest way. But if you're too far, like I don't know where everybody's coming from, but if you're too far away, we just do it on Skype. And I'll just send you a list of the things you need to have so that I can test them. And I'll just sit there and watch, and you'll kind of run them through the exercises. And then I can tell what's going on with their brain and their body and where we need to go with it. You know, get to those root causes.
How much is that original?
So the evaluation is $200, mm-hmm. And then it's just $50 a month after that. Okay. And if you've ever heard of Brain Balance, it's similar to that. Theirs is anywhere from like $5,000 to $25,000. So I'd start with me. But anyway, if you're interested in that, just write on the paper or two, and I can call you and we can talk through more specifics.
Once you're completed with that, so you say it takes about 9 months, mm-hmm. 10 months, whatever, will it stick? Will it stay? Or do they always constantly need to be
It does.
Just learn, right?
Yeah, well, so here's the fascinating thing. Once the brain knows it, it knows it. But the reason why it takes the 9 to 12 is because you want it to build up a habit. You know, like any other habit, you got to do it over and over. And so it takes longer where they'll see results pretty much right off. And so anyway, that's my time. Thank you.
Latter-day Saint Home Educators is a nonprofit, all-volunteer organization dedicated to providing inspiration to homeschool families. We hope you enjoyed this recording. If you are interested in listening to more recordings or would like to participate in a future conference, please visit our website at ldshe.org.